What's up, guys? This podcast is sponsored by Yak Attack, and that's yakattack.us. What Yak Attack is the leader in the kayak fishing industry who specializes in kayak fishing rigging solutions. As kayak anglers themselves, they are tightly integrated into the sport of kayak fishing and acutely aware of what the sport needs. It all starts off with the gear track and or the mighty mount. The gear track comes in all different sizes and colors, and the screw ball that attaches to the gear track has everything that attaches to that. So you have this T-bolt that screws into the screw ball that everything attaches to that attaches to your boat onto your tracks. And what that is a variety of rod holders and camera mounts for your still cameras and any GoPros. Light poles with the day flags that all folds into the flags. Your fish finder mounts and your black pack crate systems. All of Yak Attack's products are made in the USA. A few years ago, Yak Attack set the gold standard with kayak visibility with the Visi Carbon Pro. Fast forward to today, and it remains the most dependable light flag combo in the industry. Its 48-inch deployed height gets the flag and the light up where it can be seen, and the 14-inch collapse length allows you to stow it away easily when it's not in use. The high visibility flag doubles as a pouch, making it easy to pack away. The expectant lamp life of 10,000 plus hours of the ultra bright, high efficient LEDs, and at least 100 hours from the three AA batteries that are included. The carbon fiber mass is strong and lightweight, and the narrow profile offers low wind drag. The soft foam keeps it afloat and fits into most rod holders. Available in an array of mounting options that fits into just about all boats and popular mounts. Don't compromise with safety. Depend on what tens of thousands of other paddlers trust. There is only one Visi Carbon Pro. And that's the Visi Carbon Pro from Yak Attack at yakattack.us. This podcast is also sponsored by my DVDs at kayakkevin.com, the Kayak Fishing Chesapeake Bay series, and the Bay Tour DVD. The fishing DVDs are broken up into a trilogy. Number one is the intro into the fishery. It has a full year's worth of footage from more of the larger fish that we target in the lower Chesapeake Bay. The instructional sequels are broken up into two parts, the warm water and the cold water species. Number two is the warm water species with detailed instruction on the rigs and the fishery itself, spanning from the red drum at the shoal, flounder, and the summer species at the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, and sight casting the red drum and the striper. Number three is the cold water species with detailed instruction on the winter targets, tautog, and the eastern shore striper fishery. The Chesapeake Bay Tour DVD is a 6-week, 600-mile tour I did in 2010 around the Chesapeake Bay, filmed in kind of a survivor man style, showing everything I do and look for when I am on a long-distance tour. All these DVDs are available at kayakkevin.com. kayakkevin.com and yakattack.us. This podcast is the first of a series of podcasts I'm going to do. This is a 10-year anniversary of my Florida tour. In 2005, I did 1,800 miles from Pensacola, Florida, back home to Virginia, and this is the 10-year anniversary. I have my maps and my notebooks I did from the tour itself. And so I'm going over that and kind of reliving and looking at the Google Maps and reliving what I went over and what I did on that tour. So it's gonna be interesting. This is the I'm gonna do it in parts. It might take me a while to do it. Probably gonna do 2-week increments and go over in detail what every day was like. So hopefully you'll enjoy it. And this is the Kayak Kevin podcast, the Florida Tour editions, I guess it would be called. All right, check it out. All righty. This is podcast number 52. It is May 1st, 2015. And what I'm going to try to do here is 10 years ago, I did my longest tour, my Florida tour. I started in Pensacola and paddled all the way back. It was 1,800 miles. It took 4.5 months to do. It's 10 years anniversary on that, and I thought, you know, it'd be a good time to go over it. And wrote a notebook every day on that tour, or pretty much every day. Just to make sure, you know, to remind myself of what happened. I've got a good memory of the tour. I mean, tours, almost all of them, I can remember pretty much every day of them. And so it's going to be interesting to read this. And I haven't read this in a long time. Haven't even looked at it in a long time. So it's going to be interesting to even see what it says in here. And according to my memory, what I'll do is I'll try to, like, remember what I got, where I was. And I also have my map book that I'm going to look at also, and it has my tracks on it. I can look at this and see every day where I paddled. I drew every day after when I landed and set up camp. I drew where I went in detail, every little turn and every little place where I went through, and wind directions during the day. So I can look at this and see what day the wind directions were. And as I went, I put the wind directions, if they changed any during the day, as I went south or went north and went along my path, I added those wind directions during that day, just to keep it on track. So, you know, instead of going, it was southwest turning northwest, I as I went, every time it changed or did something, I noted it that night when I landed. Gonna do that, and so this is hopefully this is gonna be pretty cool, because I guess I need to start out what most people, I realized that when I posted this, most people know me for my fishing stuff, and don't really realize that that's my touring stuff is how, why I kind of got into kayaking. Right when I turned 30, I needed like a challenge, kind of, I guess, midlife crisis. I there's an interview I did with Rapid Media, and and it's on my front page of my website, kayakcabin.com, on the home page, and you scroll down, and it's a good interview. It's done a couple years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, right here underneath the sponsors, and it goes over kind of a lot of what I how I got into it, and you know, I was a musician and all that stuff, and ended up in kayaking. But yeah, I got into kayaking for the touring aspect of it. So it wasn't so much to do a long tour like this or anything. It was mainly just to get out there and spend some time on the water. Not so much distance and all that stuff. It's more like spending time. So, you know, this time, this tour was my third tour. My first one, actually I'll go back to my website again, if you're scroll to the top, and right where it says Chesapeake Bay Tour, you hit on that, and all the tabs come down. My tours are in order from bottom to top. My Georgia tour was in 2003, and that's when I went from the border of Georgia and Florida and paddled up north to Norfolk, to home. That took that was 500 miles, and it took about 5 weeks. That was almost like what I considered the boot camp of my touring, because I trained up going, you know, basically just going out overnights on the Eastern Shore and just learning how to camp out of a kayak. So that was kind of like my training time, and that was either going to kill me, or I was going to hate kayaking altogether, or I knew I was going to come back from this and I was going to love it. And it was the challenge that I needed. It was a straight up, you know, life or death situations a lot of times. And, you know, I survived through it. And when you go through something like that, you know, it pushes you. You push yourself, and completely alone on these tours. Oh, and that's another thing. So this tour. And then after this one, I decided I was going to do a long tour. I was going to do the Florida tour. I wanted to do that. And I definitely wanted to go over the Georgia area again. I love that area when I paddled over it the first time. And I really wanted to see that place again. So I got another boat. Oh, actually, I'm still in that boat on this one. In 2004, I did 200 miles, kind of just a two-weeker short tour, just to get trained up for this longer tour, just to kind of fine-tune everything that I didn't do right on my first tour. Like, I got a crate system going on this tour. Really kind of figured out a lot of stuff. So this was just from Oregon Inlet, North Carolina, up through the Sounds and across the bay and up to Ocean City, Maryland. And that was in 2004. So after that one, my next tour was this one, the 2005 tour. The thing about, during that time, I'm 34 years old at this time, and I don't have a computer. I'm pretty caveman at this point. I didn't get a computer until after this tour when I got back. Didn't have a website, wasn't sponsored at all. So they had no sponsors. So this was completely, my dad helped me out in a few bucks, and I put in as much as I could, and just basically quit my job and went on this tour. So I didn't have a cell phone. So it was very without a net. It was no safety net along with this tour. Didn't even have a spot tracker at this time. Really, I had no sponsors, so I had no support outside of my mom and dad, basically, and my friends. I knew Rick Burnley. I just met a year before I was going on this tour, so there was contact there. And TKAA was doing reports, so whenever I would call in every week, or I would meet somebody out there. I'd have TK on the side of my boat, and I would say, just go on this site and say you saw me. So there was a cool little tracking going on TKAA.org during that time. I think some of that stuff, I've got that stuff printed out, but that was pretty cool. Now, I didn't have a cell phone at all, no GPS either. It was all this map. The atlases and the Gazetteers, I guess what it is, the Delormes, that, and also got charts of the areas and any charts I could pick up along the way, and a compass, and that was it. No GPS. I still don't use GPS when I do stuff, when I'm camping or touring or anything like that. So during that, still pretty caveman at this time, and there was no support with it. It was without a net, and I didn't even have a digital camera. I had a 35mm camera, a waterproof housing. So, take one shot and that's all I got. And I was developing film along the way, on my stops, developing film and then sending it, mailing it back home. So I'd make every stop. So my tours, stop every week or so and stop at a marina or a campsite or something like that, campground, where I could get, I can make my runs on my... My Bay Tour DVD explains all this stuff, but what I do is and during those times I would go to the post office. I would mail off pictures and whatever I needed to mail off, and the phone thing was I would have phone cards, so that was expensive as shit. Really kind of looking back at it, mailing pictures and phone cards was expensive. So I'd get these $50 phone cards and call on pay phones and stuff like that back then. So that was when I was on the water, when I was in between stops, there was no contact. There was no cell phones. I had no computer, no internet, anything like that. There was no contact with my friends or family when I was out there. So basically, they were just all guessing, where I'd pop up every week. And roughly, I'd do 100 miles a week, and wherever I pop up, and then boom, here I am, and I call in, and I was even calling in Reese's show, Catch You on Captain Reese's show, and I was in. Elise did a thing on that, and that's on my website too. So that was, I was calling in every week. We're trying to, that was my goal was to get to a place that I could call in, reach a show every week and do my laundry, sort of do my, of course, and do all my stuff that I needed to do on tour. But yeah, during that time I was, in home life, I wasn't dating and had no girlfriends at the time. I think the girlfriend before him was like 2 years before, so I wasn't even dating at this time. So remember, I left the musician life and dove into this kayaking world, and I didn't know anybody that was kayaking. Basically, it was, TKA just started forming up at this time. So, no girlfriends and anything like that. I mean, girls were, I'd meet them at the clubs when I was a musician, and there was, no girls underneath HRBT. Underneath the bridge. So that was my life at that point. This was it. And getting ready for this tour was pretty much all I was doing. And I think I was cutting grass at the time, and I quit that job and took off on tour. So my mom drove me down. We stopped at Fort Clinch State Park when our first day was here in Jacksonville, and you know, it was a weird, it's a weird thing. Let's see, it's right here, I think. Yeah. Right here, the border of Florida and Georgia. And my first tour, I launched out of, not St. Mary's, but Crooked River. So my first tour, I launched out of here and went north. So I was in kind of familiar waters here. Now, I remember looking here and really, I'm going to have to wear my glasses. So, yes, the first time on the podcast, I'm going to have to wear my reading glasses. But, I'm gonna kind of shorthand this stuff. Mom and I left this morning. You know, we left here. This is in May. This is about the same time frame we are now. We left here in 60 degrees of rain, basically what it's kind of like today, and sweatshirts, and then, you know, ended up in the subtropics down in Florida. We stopped at this campground on Manila Island, and actually my mom went and stayed at a hotel, and I wanted to stay acclimatized to the climate down there. We left from Virginia, and I didn't want to stay inside. I needed to stay outside. And that's this whole tour, I wanted to stay outside on this. So I stayed at the campground. And, you know, during that time, it was really cool because I really got to see the environment. I really didn't have a good chance to tour from here because it was still winter here before I launched out of this tour. So I didn't really get the chance to train a lot or even spend a lot of time outside. So this was a good opportunity just to kind of feel the area. And even though I wasn't going to be back in this spot, Amelia Island, for another couple weeks, almost a month or so, it was still good to be down there. Also met some of the camp hosts, and hopefully they were going to be there when I was going to come back, because I was going to come back in here. This is definitely going to be one of my spots that I was going to land on my tour. Okay. So then the next journal entry, we drove to Pensacola the next day, and we launched out of the spot right here, Big Lagoon State Park. Where was it? Yeah, right here. I mean, pretty much here is the border of Florida basically right there. It's right around the corner, so I was right at the edge. And this is also, remember this, at this time I had never been to Florida. I'd never been this south. So this was a whole new place for me, just on that sense. Is it down here? No. Yeah, Big Lagoon State Park or State Recreation Area. Launched from this ramp right here. And also remember, I didn't have a computer at this time, so I didn't have Google Earth or Bing Maps or any kind of satellite maps to research where I was going or looking at. I didn't have any of that access during that time. So I just had my maps and just had charts, and that's all I was able to go on. Let's see, 42. Let me stretch this stuff out. Big Lagoon State Park. And that night, I mean, it was pretty late in the evening, and so all said goodbye to my mom, which was tough, because, you know, it's a thing where they know I'm experienced at this point. I've already been through two tours. The first one didn't kill me. If that was the one was going to kill me, if there was anything was going to kill me, and I survived that one. So they knew I've done two tours. They knew I knew what I was doing. I wouldn't have tried this if I didn't know what I was doing. I wouldn't have tried it if I didn't feel I was ready for it. The first one, I might not have been as ready as I needed to, but you smarten up pretty quick and you wisen up pretty quick in how to work that area before it works you. when you're out there by yourself like that. So you adapted pretty quickly. But this one, I was ready for it. I had full confidence. And you know, in going into it, I just remember it being, you know, sketchy. I remember it being, it's a nervousness because you don't know what to expect. And at this point, I've already been on two tours. I know what touring is like. I know that it's every day is something different, even though it's kind of the same thing you're paddling every day, but you never know what you're going to see every day. So I was excited for it and scared at the same time. It's a mixed combination. But I just paddled to this point, and that first day, threw out a Berkeley gulp, and just, you know, I said, I think I caught three catfish while I was trying to put up my tent. Birds already coming real close. It says a blue herring while I was putting up a tent came up right behind me. and of course, later on, I realized that there's a lot of birds just are used to people down there. And it was also kind of neat because it was the Blue Angels were practicing that next morning, which was interesting. You know, they're stationed there, and we see them here all the time, Norfolk Naval Base. I live right here in Norfolk, and we see the Blue Angels, and I grew up with them. So it was kind of cool seeing that, but they were fucking loud when they were practicing, and I paddled right down past the airport or the where they're landing and taking off, and it was just so crazy loud. I mean, right through here, I remember coming through here, it was just crazy loud. So I had a pretty hard headwind coming across Pensacola Bay. Coming across here, I had a northeast headwind, 10 to 15. And I got over to here, and as soon as I started, I just landed because I wanted to just take a break from that one little crossing. It was kind of like my warm-up, a little a little two-mile crossing, and in the headwind, it just kind of woke me up and realized, all right, I'm on tour. You know, first little bit of headwind. And as soon as I landed over here, I saw... As soon as I came in and got to the point, I saw a trout. I saw a lot of decent-sized trout, you know, pretty big trout from my perspective. So I stopped and fished right there and caught a pretty decent little trout. So it was also my first fish of the tour, so I was pretty happy about that. Sightcasted big trout and small catfish, and I was sightcasting them too, which was fun because I could see them in the water, and I was standing on the shore. I didn't even in the kayak for a long time. I stood on the shore because it was a lot easier. Because the wind was blowing me around, as I was paddling through this area, the hurricane Isaac had blown through just the year before, so there was a lot of damage still from that. I mean, all the houses still had blue tarps on and stuff like that. So as I was paddling through this area, I was just seeing all kinds of debris and mailboxes in the water. I believe I camped right here in these woods here. Let's see. Yeah, I didn't go too far. I just stayed right around here somewhere, just pulled up in these woods. The next day, another 10 to 15 mile an hour wind. So I just tucked in close. So it doesn't look like I did every day. It looked like I skipped a day. Yeah, so the next day is Thursday, Upper Pritchard's Point. Where is that? So I camp here that day. Next day, northeast winds. This is I'm getting close to Navarree, I think, and just cruised along here. Now, my first 2 weeks, I wanted to stay inside. I wanted to stay inside the intercoastal because it was right here. I didn't want to go on outside. I didn't know what the bay was going to be like. Well, actually, the Gulf. That was my big concern, what that was going to be like. If it was anything like the bay, it was going to be pretty rough up. Didn't know the currents out there. So I just figured my first 2 weeks I was going to stay inside. So basically, I stayed inside, which now I should have went on outside. I would have probably enjoyed it better. But I stayed on the inside for the entire panhandle. I stayed on the inside of the intercoast all the way through to Apalachicola. And then open water for the Big Bend, And then before I get to Tampa area, I pulled in into the Intercoastal back again. And then it was in and out of the Intercoastal as I got south. The first thing I noticed was how weird the Gulf was. It didn't act as the same as the Bay. It didn't get as rough as quick. And then the tides, I think I probably mentioned, it's probably going to come up here, but the tides were strange too. 12-hour tide cycles was odd for me to realize what was happening there. But it was weird. I'm sure I wrote about it here. Alright. So yeah, I land. Land right here, and at that point there was no houses on these places. Yeah, this right here. Oh, it's still looking like that. Yeah, this little spot, Upper Pritchard's Point, and I scooted in. I think I tucked in right around here where there was no houses, as it were, or close to many houses. Now, you know, a lot of places I was trying to tuck in away from, you know, I go to this on my Baytour DVD also, is the places where I'm looking for is not accessible to people if possible. I mean, there is, of course, people can walk to it, but that's what I tried to find. Let's see. Oh, I did a lot of fishing that day, and that's why I didn't go that far the day before. I saw some kids fishing, and they pulled out some nice reds. So I kept on working that bridge area and all that shoreline. Launched again, 10 to 15 mile an hour winds. Hugged the shoreline. Ruined docks. A lot of docks without. There still didn't have them rebuilt, so there's a lot of docks. The pilings stay, but the planks pop off, so there's just a bunch of skeleton docks, I guess. And this is you could tell as I went through this area how the eye was right through this area, because some of the floors were the damages, and the first floors were completely gutted through. We basically walked through it. A local told me that the barrier island, Santa Rosa Island, was leveled at that point and then moved back 200 yards. Oh yeah, and then I talked to somebody and figured out about these tide cycles. They would run two a day, 12-hour tide cycles, and so kitty. And it's because of that Gulf area. It's the slope coming off of the Gulf was made the tide cycles strange. So for me, that was strange coming from. Come here, kitty, get out of the way. Come here. Going from regular 6-hour tide cycles, six and a half hour tide cycles to 12-hour tide cycles. So that was strange. But there was only two foot tide, so it wasn't running that hard. But it was running all day, so my timing trying to get to where inlets are or trying to take incomings whenever I can was all screwed up. So I just kind of just forgot about all that stuff and just would paddle basically. I was going to camp at a campground, but it ended up being an only RV site. They didn't have primitive camping. So I ended up paddling more. And so in this spot, I wasn't the best spot that I like to camp on, but it was all I had available at that time, because I stopped and tried to find about a campground. The whole thing is trying to rewater, so make sure I had enough water bottles to go while I'm going in all this area. There was a lot of good spots right here. And actually, what I think I did is I stopped. Yeah, camped right through here and went across one of these spots into a cove, and then came up and went to a 7-Eleven and I got water bottles, or got more water, because I was starting to run out of water. The next day, hmm. more headwinds as I came into this area. As I was paddling through this area, it just the headwinds got so bad through here. Like 15 to 20, I stopped real early in the day just to get out of the winds. Some of these little islands, these little spoil islands. And a lot of the, what was cool also about this area was these spoil islands here and on the east coast of Florida were all campable. I mean, these were, you got the channel here and they dumped the stuff that they cut out of the channel and these islands are formed up. And all of these were campable. I mean, you know, these were all just hangout beaches basically. So, I mean, that's a big beach right there. I mean, these were awesome spots. So you, camping there was easy. So it wasn't really sweating the spot to camp, which was fine. Oh yeah, and I was still drinking there this time, so that's why I went to 7-Eleven and got some beers. Yep, went to a store, found a little inlet, and had to crawl up a wall to get to, you know, embankment to get to the store. But it was fun. It was like, you know, just, it was sketchy leaving my boat in one spot, but you know, I was right across the street and I could see it. Again, northeast winds for the next morning. And that shifted. I fished for a while until the wind shifted, and then launched back out again. The current, the current was strong around the inlet, but I paddled around. And with the south winds this time, I was hugging the other shoreline. And also, that's another thing about staying inside. No matter what the winds are doing, I can always hug a shoreline. If the winds were blowing north, I could hug up the south shoreline. And winds were blowing south like it was on this day. I was able to hug just along here. And, ooh, kitty, I'm getting it all out of focus. You want to get off of here? Move. So this day, I think I stopped right along the other side of this bridge. Right here. So I paddled all this that day. Just kind of just cruised through here. Hit here. South wind. Then it looked like it, from about here, started to calm out. So I just had a straight paddling day on that day. Looks like before I launched, I went back to that store and had a little soft side cooler and had some beer in it, and actually I had it all the way to this point. And looks like I tucked in right on the other side of this and camped out here that night. So I had to get a little bit of embankment, and there was a bar over here, and I remember it making a lot of noise, and it was a Friday night, so there was a lot of noise going on over there. I remember keeping me up. No, I need to start getting out to a little bit more wilderness. But the thing is, I was about ready to go into this channel all through here. So, you know, about ready. If I was going to do it again, I wouldn't have done that, because that was pretty boring and pretty monotonous through that whole thing. And it was deep. It was a deep cut, big walls. But the first part of it looked like I had very chill winds until about noon. They picked up from the south, and all at once, 15 mile an hour. Oh yeah, I haven't even seen an alligator at this point yet, so I'm looking for an alligator. Pretty boring through here. Just stopped off to get some shade, seeing bald eagles and ospreys. Just pretty stoked. Look like I'm writing a book about bald eagles that I saw. See, no, we're not really campsites through the cut. Yeah, there's walls and stuff. It was hard to see. West Bay Bridge. So I paddled all through here. Oh yeah, and camped out underneath West Bay Bridge that night. Just found a spot. Basically, I think I just see what was over here. I camped out close to over here somewhere. I think I camped out right underneath that bridge. Nah, I couldn't have.